We can offer you a desk and chair.
Where?
At the police station, tomorrow. You want me to come to work with you?
To the police station?
You don't quite trust me yet, do you?
You're in my house, with my wife and children sleeping in it.
Reacher nodded.
Can't argue with that.
But Kim Peterson wasn't sleeping.
Not right then.
10 minutes after Andrew Peterson left him alone, Reacher got tired of the stale hop smell from the 4 empty beer bottles, so he trapped their necks between his knuckles and carried them, 2 in each hand, out to the kitchen, hoping to find a trash bin. Instead, he found Kim Peterson tidying her refrigerator. The room was dark, but the light inside the appliance was bright. She was bathed in a yellow glow. She was wearing an old candlewick bathrobe. Her hair was down. Reacher held up the 4 bottles as a mute inquiry.
Under the sink,
Kim Peterson said. Reacher bent down and opened the cabinet door, lined up the bottles neatly with 6 others already there.
Got everything you need?
She asked him.
Yes, thanks.
Did Andrew ask you to do something for him?
He wants me to make some calls.
About the army camp?
Reacher nodded.
Are you going to do it?
Reacher said, I'm going to try.
Good. That place drives him crazy.
I'll do my best.
Promise?
Ma'am?
Promise me, if he asks, would you help him any way you can? He works too hard. He's responsible for everything now.
Chief Holland is overwhelmed. He barely knows half his department.
Andrew has to do everything, which is hard, on him and on me.
There was a tiny bathroom off the den, and Reacher used it to take a long hot shower. Then he folded his clothes over the back of the chair that Peterson had used and climbed under the covers. The sofa springs creaked and twanged under his weight. He rolled one way, rolled the other, listened to the loud tick of the clock, and was asleep a minute later. 5 to 1 in the morning. 51 hours to go. Chapter 10. Reacher woke up at 6:50 to a silent, sepulchral world. Outside the den windows, the air was thick with heavy flakes. They were falling gently but relentlessly onto a fresh accumulation that was already close to a foot deep. There was no wind. Each one of the billions of flakes came parachuting straight down, sometimes wavering a little, sometimes spiraling, sometimes sidestepping an inch or two. Each one disturbed by nothing except its own featherweight instability. Most added their tiny individual masses to the thick white quilt they landed on. Some stuck to fantastic vertical feathered shapes on power lines and fence wires and made the shapes taller. The bed was warm, but the room was cold. Reacher guessed that the iron stove had been banked overnight, its embers hoarded, its air supply cut off. He wondered for a moment about the correct protocol for a house guest under such circumstances. Should he get up and open the dampers and add some wood? Would that be helpful? Or would it be presumptuous? Would it upset a delicate and long-established combustion schedule and condemn his hosts to an inconvenient midnight visit to the woodpile 2 weeks down the road? In the end, Reacher did nothing. Just kept the covers pulled up to his chin and closed his eyes again. 5 to 7 in the morning. 45 hours to go. 1,700 miles to the south, the day was already an hour older. Plato was eating breakfast in the smaller of his 2 outdoor dining rooms. The larger was reserved for formal dinners, and therefore little used, because formal dinners meant business dinners, and most of his current business associates were Russians, and Russians didn't much care for the evening heat 100 miles from Mexico City. They preferred air conditioning. Plato supposed it was a question of what they were accustomed to. He had heard that parts of Russia were so cold you could spit, and the saliva would freeze
and bounce off the ground like a marble. Personally, he didn't believe it. He was prepared to accept that parts of Russia recorded very low temperatures, and certainly some of the extreme numbers he had seen in almanacs and weather reports might indeed freeze a small volume of organic liquid in the space and time between mouth and ground. But to survive in such an environment, he was sure a human would have to wear a ski mask, possibly made from silk or a more modern synthetic material, and spitting was categorically impossible while wearing a ski mask. And he understood that, in general, extremely low temperatures went hand in hand with extremely low humidity, which would discourage spitting anyway, maybe even to the point of impracticality. Thus, the anecdote was illustrative without being functionally true. Plato was proud of his analytical abilities. He was thinking about Russians because he had received an intriguing proposal from one of them an hour ago by telephone. It was the usual kind of thing. A cousin of a friend of a brother-in-law wanted a bulk quantity of a certain substance, and could Plato help the man? Naturally, Plato's first priority was to help Plato, so he had viewed the proposal through that lens, and he had arrived at an interesting conclusion, which might, with a little honing and salesmanship, be turned into an advantageous deal. Dramatically advantageous, in fact, and completely one-sided in his own favor, of course. But then, he was Plato, and the unnamed Russian cousin wasn't. There were three main factors. First, the deal would require a fundamental shift in the Russian's initial baseline assumption, in that the bulk quantity would not be transported to the Russian, but the Russian would be transported to the bulk quantity. Second, the deal would require complete faith on Plato's part in the notion that a bird in the hand was worth two in the bush. And third, the deal would change things a little up in South Dakota. Therefore, the situation up there had to remain pristine and viable and immaculate and perfectly attractive. Perfectly marketable, in other words, which meant the witness and the lawyer had to be dealt with sooner rather than later. Plato reached for his phone. At 7:14, the old farmhouse was still quiet. At 15 minutes past, it burst into life. Reacher heard the thin beep and wail of alarm clocks through walls and ceilings, and then the stumbling tread of footsteps on the second floor. Four sets, parents, and two children. Two boys, Reacher figured, judging by the uninhibited clumsiness of their progress. Doors opened and closed, toilets flushed, showers ran. 10 minutes later, there was noise in the kitchen, the gulp and hiss of a coffee machine, the padded slam of the refrigerator door, the scrape of chair legs on floorboards. Again, Reacher wondered about applicable protocol. Should he just go out and join the family at breakfast? Or would that scare the children? He supposed it would depend on their ages and their constitutions. Should he wait to be invited? Or should he wait until the children had left for school? Would they be going to school at all, with a foot of new snow on the ground?